Welcome to Dazer Update for January 25th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jan Rip Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news and things to talk about. We have a bunch of games that have gotten dates, especially some big ones here for March. And maybe the new longest title that Nintendo has announced so far for a Switch 2 game. We got the Xbox Developer Direct with a few games of interest there. Ubisoft decided to make the biggest business news of the week as they announced, let's say, an overhaul of their entire business.
Yeah, because they kind of had to realize, yeah, guys, we have been pissing away money for like better part of 5 years now. It might be a good idea to go back and start re-looking at, you know, stuff and not have that happen anymore.
Yeah. But we also got some more layoff news and a couple of interesting bits of information for Steam and, let's say, some potential political interest in the EA acquisition.
Yep.
Before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we're playing, and I will kick it off here. I have been playing some Arknight Enfield, the newest anime style gacha game that has come out for like it's PS5, PC, and mobile. I would say the big thing that kind of sets this one apart from others is that the maybe a big part of what you're doing here is kind of building out structures to expand the network of your base, maybe with a little bit of like Astroneer or Death Stranding to it. You're not delivering things or anything like that. You're doing your usual fighting enemies and busting up ore chunks and all this kind of stuff to gather materials to build new towers and such to extend the reach of your base and all that. Story-wise, you are playing as an amnesia, a character with amnesia that comes to find out that they are the head of this company called Enfield that is trying to colonize this planet. Though they admit it's not really a planet, it's a moon of a planet called Talos 2 that has some particularly nasty stuff going on. There's, you know, big storms and all this other stuff going on there that has kind of broken up their network of bases and such. So you kind of go down to deal with things, especially as you have, you know, a big thing they call like an anchor that has threatened to destroy the main base your company has. And so you kind of go down and bust some heads and save the day and start working on putting things back together. And I'd say the other thing that kind of sets us apart from the other games I've played is that a lot of the people are in anime terms, you know, cat girls and like animal hybrids of a sort. One of the main characters you meet is a character named Mr. Andre, who is half owl. But I've seen a number of sort of hybrids like this, so if you're into that, this is very much your game, though you don't play as one of those. At least the main character isn't one of those. It's just like a normal guy or girl. You pick, you know, the gender of the character at the start. But yeah. Otherwise, it's got all your basic stuff. You know, you get tickets that you spend to for polls on different characters, and as you might expect, there are a lot of girls with big boobs that bounce around as doing stuff, and especially doing that when they're animating the bits when they're introduced.
Oh yeah,
that's a core thing. There are some guys, but not as much as the girls. They're all, you know, elemental types, and they have like DPS, tank, and I think medic types of characters, so team build is fairly important here, though I'm still, you know, a few hours in where that's not that big of a deal yet. You have all the same kind of thing. You can collect materials and such to upgrade your character's level quickly and all that. So, yeah. It's got all that stuff that, you know, Genshin Impact and all that had. It's just not, you know, Genshin Impact was very much aping your typical open world game, especially like Breath of the Wild. This is not doing as much of that. It's more of an action game. And, you know, doing missions and such. But otherwise, I've not gotten to anything else that seems to stand out. It's just another one of those you can do stuff with, and it's been pretty decent so far, so I'll probably keep playing for a bit more until I get bored of it. But for now, that's Arknight Enfield. I've also been playing Mio Memories in Orbit for the PC, which I've been enjoying so far. I've got like 2 to 3 hours into it right now. It's a Metroid-y game, which trying to pin down what game it's aping the most, I don't know that I could so much, because it's taking a lot of elements from different games, and so it's kind of got a bit of its own flavor to it. You're playing as a robot who's awoken in this like space station thing that is, I don't know, I don't even know really what it's going for, if it's trying to find some habitable place for humans or something, but most of the robots around here are not having a good time. Either they've been, you know, destroyed, or they're in bad shape and need you to help them get back in working order. And especially they have these different areas that have robots that are kind of the body parts of this spaceship. So the first one you find is the spine. Where they're just kind of in this weird little like pool, and you dump the currency you get into it that looks like piss for a good bit, because it's kind of yellowish and it's like and it seems like it's going to be like a Hollow Knight, as you're collecting this currency, and when you get killed, you assume you're going to drop it and have to go find it again. But no, it's essentially just gets put into that pool, and you know, you just respawn back at the little like station that you start at. I found a nice little trick that when you're off in some part of the map that you're either afraid you're going to die trying to get back to, you know, one of your main areas, you can just kind of quit back to the main menu and launch the game again, and you'll just be right back at that little station. So I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. I don't know that it should do that, but it should just save your spot. Because what if you're saving when you're deep into an area and just like, oh, I don't have time to finish this, and then you have to start all over again kind of thing. But it has a Symphony of the Night style modifier system where you are collecting these modifiers that, like, the initial ones are just like, oh, you can see your own health bar. You can see enemy health bars, that kind of stuff. But you can eventually get more from a merchant that you unlock at a certain point that will add some more things to that, like adding an extra, I think, another health bar or chunk to your health bar, or making some of the healing stations or making them free to use. Otherwise, you use some of that currency for it, which is seems a little steep, but at a certain point you get enough of that where that's not really a big deal. It's like 10 per chunk you need to refill, so it's not really too hard. And kind of like Silk Song, you get these little robots that will turn your currency into hard chunks that then goes into a secondary version of that currency that you don't lose when you die. So that can be useful. Is just like, oh, I want to, you know, have X amount of currency that you're trying to save for, you know, upgrades or whatever. That's the thing you can work for. That's nice. And yeah, like where I'm at, I've beaten 2 bosses so far. The first one I almost beat on the first try, Literally got down to the last chunk, and I just jumped right at it instead of staying back and like taking my time to attack it. That ended up being frustrating, but I came back and literally the second time I beat it without ever taking a hit because I had seen all of its patterns and knew how to dodge everything. It's not a super hard game, at least so far. I assume it will. It also has like a weird like mechanic where you can lose chunks of your health bar permanently, where I think initially you start with four chunks, and then if you play through the intro and kind of explore every area, you kind of run into certain parts where I don't know if it's a robot or something that does this, but they will just essentially disable these chunks of your health bar, which is like an interesting mechanic. It's not really well explained, but it's interesting that they do that, and I don't think there's a way to regain those, rebuild those. So it's just kind of a weird thing, but you do, you know, get upgrades over time. Like I have three of four of a certain thing that will add a new chunk to that health bar kind of stuff. And it's the kind of health bar system where if I have two chunks, you can take two hits and then you are in a, you know, you'll die with the next hit kind of state where your health bar turns red and the screen turns a little red to make sure you understand that. And yeah, it's a tough place to be, but you kind of, if you do die, you go back to your, back to like your base area and work your way back. But so far they do a lot of unlocking, you know, shortcuts back to these different places. So your trek tends to be shorter as you go. Like where I'm at, I've gotten the, like a grappling hook kind of ability that lets me get into some new areas. That is pretty cool. It's a little hard to get at first because it's got a range to it. So it's not necessarily like, oh, this thing's on screen, I can definitely get to it. It's like, oh, you got to be within a certain distance of it kind of thing. And then once you use it, it has, you know, depletes the energy for this tool, and you have to be on the ground to use it, to refill it, and then be able to use it again. So that leads to, I assume, areas where they will have the floor be a rare thing you could land on, and you have to get through, you know, tricky areas like that stuff. There's other mechanics I've seen on the controller mapping screen that I don't have yet. It's like a dodge and some other stuff, so I still got things to unlock. But they do give you a double jump right from the go, which is really nice. So, yeah, that's a game that I've been really liking so far. It looks really good. It has some great music to it, so I am excited to play some more of that. So that's Mio Memories in Orbit. I think it's on pretty much everything. I guess PlayStation, Switch, PC, and Xbox. So that's well worth checking out. Let's see. Yeah, I got this on, I think, the most recent Steam sale in the winter. Is This Seat Taken? This is a puzzle game that is pretty well done. It is basically, you are arranging these people on the, you know, these very social situations, you know, like a movie theater, a bus, you know, different kinds of seating arrangements. They will have, you know, various requests that you see, like, oh, I don't want to sit next to stinky people, and I don't want to, you know, sit next to or be near loud music, but I also want a window seat. And you're like, okay, where can I find this potential, you know, spot that solves this issue? And then you do that with all the people that you get. You know, you usually start with a handful of people, and then they start, you go through various phases of these puzzles. You know, if it's a bus to go to the next stop, and some people get off and others stay on, and you get new people to put in there, and so you're trying to rearrange everything to make all these situations work out. Usually it's like four or five stages to finish a level, and it's a pretty quick game. I feel like it's a game that I've played through the first handful of levels and still haven't broken an hour. I feel like it's probably a game that's maybe 3 or 4 hours at most. It's pretty quick, but for $10, it seems like a really good puzzle game. I've been enjoying that a lot. It has some really nice style to it and all that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just a fun, fairly not simple, because you get to a lot of good complications, and there's a little bit of story to it that is pretty neat. But yeah, it's one I definitely recommend if you like your puzzle games. So there's that. And the last mm-hmm. one I've been playing some more of is Euro Truck Simulator 2, as I'm checking out the Nordic Horizons DLC and their mm-hmm. event for that. That has that needs me to deliver jobs to 6 cities in each of the 3 countries, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. I've completed Finland, so I've done 5 of the 6 in Sweden, so I've worked my way over to Norway, because there's no easy way to get to the one Swedish city I want to finish off on. So I'm basically gone to like middle of Norway, and I'm kind of working my way up. So that's kind of where I'm at on that, but really enjoying that a lot. So that's pretty much all I have to say there. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, because of, you know, recent events that I won't talk about right now, but I'll bring them up on the next episode of Let's Weekend when we get to it next week, hopefully. I've been using, you know, my Nintendo subscription to play a bunch of old games. Obviously, I'm still playing Splatoon 3, and slowly getting better at it. But like I've said before a million times already, that game is incredibly unbalanced, and you kind of just have to accept the fact that it's unbalanced and go from there. But still incredibly entertaining, and still sort of trying to suss out like what kind of tools that you want to get for the various types of competitions in that game. If you're doing a regular turf war, you're going to want some kind of weapon that's going to be able to put as much ink everywhere as possible, while at the same time being able to have enough with it so you're not constantly having to reload in the middle of like a firefight or whatever. And usually I've found it's usually the weapons like the spray guns or stuff like that that helps basically paint the place with it. But I've also realized that it's also kind of a luck of the draw, because it's completely possible that, a lot of it just sort of depends on what your other people on your team are going to be equipped with and how good they are with that. So, yeah, there's that. But when you're doing, like, one of the anarchy battles where you're dealing with stuff like for example, like the tower one, where there's like this moving tower that's like on a track, and it's going from like one part of the place to another until you're trying to get it into the rival team, their area. You're going to want something that can, is something that can like get rid of your enemy quickly enough, but also, something that, can put a lot of ink on the ground to make it that much harder for them to get to you. And I still really, really hate Clam Blitz. Clam Blitz is just the stupidest of all of them. It's damn near impossible to play. I have no idea how others do it so well. And frankly, it just pisses me the hell off. But that's like as far as like more recent gaming. I also, like Chris, I have also been playing Mio, but I'm not as far into it as he is. But I will, echo what he said, which is that, yes, it is quite a fun and entertaining game and very mysterious. Like he said, it's a Metroidvania, but I'm not really sure, like, what kind of Metroidvania it's going for exactly, but it does feel, like, vaguely familiar. The other stuff I've been playing using my Nintendo subscription is one of the games I've really been playing a lot this last week is Donkey Kong Country 2. That's a blast in the past for me, because I got Donkey Kong Country 2 for my birthday when I was, like, I think, like 8 or 9 years old, way back then, and I remember it very distinctly because we had to pay cash for that. And this was back when your average SNES cartridge cost like $80. So, it was a lot, but so I've been playing that, and I don't know how many of y'all remember playing the old Donkey Kong Country games. Donkey Kong Country 2 is significantly harder than the original Donkey Kong Country was in like a lot of different ways. One of the issues that was always plagued not just Donkey Kong Country 2, but like the whole original trilogy was that because the environments were like so detailed for a SNES game, it was kind of hard to figure out like where a hazard ends and where it begins. So like for example, where does the ground end? Like it'll look like, oh, there's like a little like lip of, surface area here that I can just sort of move up to the edge when I need to jump, and nope, you just fall right to it, to your de straight through it to your death. So, that's kind of a big issue. Also, you pretty much have to play that entire game holding the run button down, because otherwise you can't really like traverse a lot of the various pits and stuff in that game otherwise. And it's crazy like how quickly the difficulty factor like increases between like the first world and then into the second. It's like it's nonsense to be to not to be honest. But still, those old games were popular for a reason. They were really fun, and Donkey Kong Country 2 is still really fun. It doesn't look nearly as good now as it did back in the old days, because that game was originally made for like CRT TVs, and you try playing it on modern, high definition televisions, and the aging is very obvious. But still quite a bit fun. The other game that I have been playing on on Nintendo Classics is a game I had seen it in like the NES, collection area where like all the game boxes are all lined up and you go to them, and I'm reading the description and I'm like, man, I really want to play this, but it's like it's not translated, it's still completely in Japanese, and I'm like, maybe I should just give this a shot. Maybe there's not a whole lot of Japanese in it. Turns out there actually isn't a whole lot of Japanese in it, and it also turns out that it's kind of awesome. Basically, it's like a sci-fi war simulation game that is essentially broken up into like three different sort of gameplay styles. There's like the overworld where you've got like a mothership that you're in and you're traversing all over this galaxy with all these planets all spread out, and you're essentially what you're doing is you're going to each of these planets and liberating them, while at the same time you're encountering like various like enemy armadas that are also represented by like their own motherships that you'll come across. And if you encounter one of the motherships, you essentially go into like a I guess the best way to describe it is like it's like a turn-based strategy type thing, where, let me see if I can, yeah, where essentially there's like a grid, and the enemy will like arrange their various battleships on the grid, and you have to do the same. And these are like phased-based battles. It's like a t it's it very much is like a tactical battle screen. You position your ships on like your side of the battlefield. They put theirs on their side, and then you just snap. You just hit the button, and they fight it out. And if you win, you also get some intel about what the enemy is doing or some of their secrets or whatever, which can't really read any of it because again, it's all in Japanese, but you don't really need it. But if you're doing like the planets, what that does is you basically go down into it in like a mech suit, and it's essentially a side-scrolling shooter. You can't really fly like most shmups, but you can like jump really high. And I'm not sure if it's because, you know, the gravity on these planets is really low, or if you just have like jump boosters or whatever. But you've got like a basic shooter. And before you go and get started on these, you've got like a group of like sub weapons that sort of fire automatically, that you can sort of like arrange in like a line to like the order of where you want them to start firing at. And it's, you know, there's like a boss at the end of it, and if you manage to kill the boss, you've liberated the planet. That's basically how the game works. There's like 14 planets in all, and it's just, it's really, really cool. And I'm like, this is like a type of game that I've like dreamed about playing for like a long time, because I'd always like, you know, I love my big sci-fi space stuff, but I'm like, what if you could make like a game that has like strategy elements, but also like shooter elements and all this stuff? And here it is. The game actually exists. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, a bunch of stuff for me that I really can't talk about as of yet. As usual, I'm playing a lot of Madden. You know, I'm in a franchise with a lot of other freelance journalists and stuff, so that's pretty cool. I use the Arizona Cardinals. I'm in my bye week right now, and I'm 5-4. So we're on our second season. Last year, I only won 4 games. So the fact that I've already won more games than I won the last season means I'm getting better. I don't know if that's because my team is getting better or whether I'm actually getting better myself, but it makes me feel good playing against, fellow other journalists ourselves. So that's cool. I also finished Big Hops. Talked a little bit about this last week. So for those of you that don't know about Big Hops, it is an indie platformer about a cute little frog named Hop. And basically, it starts off in a little forest where you pretty much learn his moveset. And it's very much like Mario, to be honest, or Mario Odyssey, Mario Galaxy. The movement is very similar. He has a typical jump, he has a high jump, he has the ability to dive. And it's cool because you want to learn how to use these combinations of jumps in order to get to different areas. On top of that, he can also climb, and the climbing is very similar to the modern Zelda games, where there's an energy or stamina meter there. And of course, being a frog, he has a tongue, and that tongue allows him to latch on to certain things, to swing, to eat things, and whatever it may be. Also in the game are various fruit and vegetables that are either consumable or you can use to have different kinds of effects on the environments you're in. So there's the mushroom, which can turn into a trampoline. There's chili peppers that allow you to set things on fire. There's these green floaty fruits that'll just spit out, and when you lick them, all of a sudden, like, you launch yourself onto really, really high places. So it's really, really cool in that regard. The main thing about this game is that it's kind of both a platformer where you want to get from point A to point B, but it's also a little bit of a collectathon. Just to talk a little bit about the story. At the very beginning, you're in a forest, as I mentioned, and then all of a sudden Hop gets lost and finds himself in these ancient ruins where he has to find these orbs to bring to this totem pole. And after he does that, you're transported to this void, and you meet this weird purple being named Dis, and he's a jerk, but he's also the one that puts you on your quest to get these dark drips to really just fix reality or whatever it may be. But at the same time, like, Hop just wants to go home. So in addition to finding these dark drips, he also finds this rabbit that's a professor who can, build this airship so he can go home with it. So there's two main things to collect. You have those drips, and then you have the airship parts. Now, the airship parts are pretty much what you really need to really advance through the game. Like, I liken those to like the Triforce. In the Zelda games, you got to find the Triforce or the three spiritual stones, whatever it may be. And then the dark drips are kind of like the stars in Mario, but at the same time, there isn't really much of a reason for you to search for these dark drips aside from the fact that you'll find them every now and then. But yeah, there is a point in, or if you do get them all, it'll somewhat change the ending. But at the end of the day, it's not something that you really actually need to do. That being said, one of the reasons why I struggled through my playthrough was I just found the middle part to be just not as fun, primarily because the platforming takes a back seat to puzzle solving. And don't get me wrong, like I love puzzles, but a lot of the puzzles were really sort of skill based because you had to use the various power ups and fruits and vegetables you had with you, and it's open ended to a point where you can actually keep some in your bag so you can use them in different levels, and it really relies on your creativity to get to places. But when you're so used to platforming and you're enjoying the platforming, like you like that sort of fast pace of doing things, and all of a sudden when you're solving these puzzles, it slows down tremendously. But yeah, like once you get through that and you actually get to play through all the various levels in the game, and by the way, there's only four worlds in the game, so it's fairly short. Yeah, it really starts to open up from there. But then towards the end of the game, you go on this weird fetch quest that is also like timed because you're chased by these beings that all of a sudden like really change things up. And I just found that all to be really, really random. So this really it was a fun game, but it got a pretty average score for me just because I felt like it tried to do a little too much when it really should have just focused on one thing a little bit more. Like it has great platforming, it has great puzzles, but they just didn't have the right combination of the two to really have, a defining really a real defined part of it. And then the other thing that I wasn't really fond of with this game is the fact that, yes, while there is a story, every character in the game like has every NPC has like a problem that you need to solve, whether it be a side quest or whether it be something central to the actual plot. Everybody is needy and everybody is a jerk. And Hop is just like this cute little frog. And he's like, all right, everyone's just telling this dude what to do. Like, when you're Mario or when you're Sonic, you don't really deal with it. You do it because you want to. And yeah, I just found that really unnerving. And I was like, all right, I feel like the people that wrote this game were just big on teen angst. But I don't know. I've actually talked to like the head developer of the game, and he's a really cool dude. But I was like, man, a lot of these characters in the game are just assholes, and that's something I wasn't really fond of from a colorful, whimsical platformer. And as a result, it was not whimsical just because of how things went. But at the end of the day, it's still an enjoyable title. I probably wouldn't spend full price on this just because of like the way I felt about it. But at the end of the day, like I said, the puzzles are fun, platforming is fun. It's definitely like not a waste of time if you decide to jump into it. But at the same time, it's also like not a must play that I thought it would be when I first played it at GDC last year. So yeah, that's that. The last thing I want to talk about, something that I've been playing, but it's something that I enjoyed this weekend. I flew to LA on Friday. I actually just got back home today because I was invited to the Persona Live 2026 Awakenings concert. For those of you that are not aware, the Persona music is absolutely amazing, and in Japan they do their concert tour like every year, and this is the first time they've brought it to the United States. And as of right now, they're only in LA. So they had one performance on Friday and two on Saturday. I went to the first one on Saturday, and it was absolutely amazing. It was held at the Dolby Theater, which yeah, it's Dolby, so the acoustics and sound will be great. And we had performances from various songs in Persona 5 as well as Persona 3. Of course, 4 is not there because 4 hasn't really been remade. We know that they're working on it. And for those of you wondering if they had information on 6, no, it didn't happen. But yeah, like this is all for Persona's anniversary, and it was cool because we had Lin, the main singer from Persona 5. We also had Lotus Juice, the main rapper from Persona 3, and then the other vocalist for Persona 3, who I'm forgetting the name of. But yeah, like I'm gonna write the review on it soon. But yeah, it was a really, really good time hearing all of these performances done live with the guitars, with the vocal performances, with the dancing. They had cosplaying dancers, dressed as Joker, dressed as Makoto, whoever it may be. Like all the characters were represented, except for characters like Makoto from P5, as well as what's his name, Akechi, you know, my favorite character from P5 as well. But it was definitely cool seeing all that happen. It was really, really hype. And the main thing was that it was a 2-hour show. There was no intermission, but it was really a whole lot of fun. I've really enjoyed these various game music performances over the years. Like back when they did the Zelda Symphony, I would go every year. I've taken my brother to the Pokemon Phonics thing. And this one was really unique just because of that whole like rocker and rap vibe. And if I were to compare this to anything, it would be the Sonic Symphony, because with the Sonic Symphony, the first half is actually a symphony. And then the second half is a rock concert, because obviously like the modern Sonic games are big on rock. And yeah, like Sega is really killing it with their properties and these concerts. So I hope to see the Persona 1 eventually become an American tour. That would be great. And one thing that I really was surprised about was the performers for the Persona songs speak really good English. Actually, Lotus Juice is based in New Jersey. So like he was talking about, you know, how much he really enjoys performing for people in the United States, because, you know, when they're in Japan, they don't sing along with you. It's a different kind of sling fan. With New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, they're excellent wrestlers over there, but there aren't really cheers for the specific wrestlers like you see in WWE, where everybody has catchphrases and everyone sings their theme song and stuff like that. So it's really cool seeing, you know, people from Japan just come here and really just enjoy the vibes of the American audience. And yeah, it's a really, really good time. So I will talk about it, or I'll write about it for the site sometime this week. And yeah, it was fun. And that's all I got for now.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. Mm-hmm. And first up, we have this that happened this past week. Yakuza Kiwami 3 and Dark Tides has a demo out now. Mm-hmm. On PC, PS5, Xbox, and Switch 2. And it is probably a bit more extensive than you might expect, because it lets you check out a bit of Yakuza Kiwami 3, as well as the Dark Tides expansion, like whatever, like standalone thing that they have as well. So yeah, so you can check out a bit in the story featuring Yoshitaka Mine, Gordon Kamurocho, and some side experiences and such. So and the main game lets you check a bit of the early parts of it. So yep, that seems like a pretty solid demo. That's the game is out February 12th, so get some time to check that out.
Yeah, it should be an interesting thing. The main thing for me is that these demos do not forward progress to the actual game, so this is going to be a no from me. But it'll be interesting, because I haven't played any of the main titled Yakuza games aside from Like a Dragon, so I don't know if this is one that I can really dive into, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that you can check out. The other thing that already happened this week, Donkey Kong Country Returns HD got a new update that adds Switch 2 enhancements, as well as I think Dixie Kong is a playable character. So it's got a bit more going on here. Yeah, when playing alone, as you grab a barrel, you can switch between either Diddy Kong or Dixie Kong as the character that appears. Playing with two people, the second player can switch between Diddy or Dixie by pressing the L stick, the left stick, in on the world map. They also added a turbo attack mode. It's sort of a speed run mode for that. Mm-hmm. So that's neat. And yeah, now for the Switch 2 version, it supports game share. You play with another local person. They've improved the resolution for that, and load times are shorter, which was one of the big issues that original release had, is that the load times are fairly lengthy. So I've not had a chance to start it up to see how much shorter it is, but any improvement is good for that game.
Definitely.
So yeah, your new random game that got a Switch 2 update for it. So
yeah, I mean, a lot of people forget that the game actually came out this time last year, so it's just over a year old, but it's definitely cool to see some improvements made because, yeah, Miles was the one that reviewed it for us last year, and it was not a good rating. So, you know, we obviously don't go back and change them, but I'm happy that Nintendo is actually going back and fixing
it. Yeah, especially because you had to spend $450 to get a better version of it.
Exactly.
Is that? And we've got one happening tomorrow, actually, on Monday. Mm-hmm. The game I've been playing for much of the fall, Ball Pit, has its first big update coming out. The Regal mm-hmm. update, they're calling it. That will be adding, let's see, two new characters. The Carousel, who's returning balls orbit around him. Oh, that's cool. And the Falconer. Mm. Flanked by her two trusted falcons that throw balls. Okay, so she can shoot balls probably in different directions. Okay, so those are cool ones. They also add 8 new balls and several new passives. So those are the sort of vampires, survivors style weapons, essentially, and passives. So that's cool. They've also added, let's see, say one nice surprise that they don't want to spoil yet, so that'll be fun. That's cool to see. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this as I'm still playing it. I was playing it not last night, but the night before. Enjoying that a lot. So yeah, that's Ball Pits. Well, we'll check it out, and they are adding new stuff as we go, so that's cool to see. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And now we got some stuff that's coming out in the near future. We knew Marathon was coming out in March, but now we know that it will be out March 5th for PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
$40. They got pre-order bonuses. And also mm-hmm. pre-order bonus if you have a Destiny 2 already linked to your Bungie.net account, which is pretty easy to do because it's free to play now. So
mm-hmm.
if you haven't done that, you should probably do that pretty soon. Mm-hmm. They have a $60 deluxe edition that I guess gets you the first premium rewards pass.
Yeah.
I assume that's their battle pass thing. And some extra stuff there. And there's a big fancy physical edition, collector's mm-hmm. edition, that is Bungie Store exclusive. I don't know what the price is on that, but I'm going to guess too much.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And yeah, this, since they delayed the game from coming out, I think last September, they have done a bunch of work, and I think people mm-hmm. are much more positive on it now after the more recent tech tests they've been doing. So I am looking forward to this. And they've also announced like the voice cast that I think is mostly going to be people doing audio logs, which has a bunch of big names in it. It's like Dave Fennoy, Jennifer English, Ben Starr's on here, in case you need to know. Fred Tatasciore. Yeah. A bunch of big names here. Roger Clark. Mm. So yeah. Lots of good voice acting stuff going on here, so that'll be cool. But yeah, that's pretty soon. That's just over a month away. And I'll probably check this one out.
Yeah. I hope this ends up being good, because this is Bungie's like first independent outing since Destiny 2. So and you know, they're using a name and a franchise that is extremely treasured by, you know, gamers of a certain age. So, you know, just for their sake, I hope it's good.
So yeah, there you go for that. That'll be fun to see. And yeah, I might check out the old games beforehand. Mm-hmm. Kind of get a little into the world.
Yeah, it's they're honestly, they're the original Marathon trilogy is unique for one thing. It was essentially like the only real, for a while, like the only real FPS you could play on a Macintosh back in the day, because, you know, Doom and Wolfenstein, all of those were basically exclusive to PC. But also they were one of the first like FPS games to like embrace the idea of like various storytelling things that a lot of like other games like BioShock would and System Shock would use, including that like they didn't have audio logs, but they did have like log entries that were connected to like computer terminals and stuff, and it was really cool. So yeah, they're definitely worth playing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's some of the checkouts. Let's see, we got the following week on March 12th, Greedfall: The Dying World will be out in 1.0 on Steam, and we'll also be out on consoles, PS5 and Xbox. So people will be able to check those out. Yeah, it was formerly called Greedfall 2: The Dying World, but I guess they decided to drop the 2 for some reason. But yeah, I know the you enjoyed the first game, so final release for this one as a the sort of BioWare-esque kind of fantasy RPG.
It very similar. Yeah, it's basically, a sequel to a game that was also called Greedfall, which was very odd in a lot of ways. It's Spider, and Spider is known for putting out games that are, conceptually pretty good, but they also tend to be pretty janky. But
Yeah.
we'll see.
So yeah, that's also not too far off for that. So yeah, we've got also in March on the 26th, we finally found out Life is Strange Reunion is the new game. And they've decided to bring back Chloe as the thing that will definitely get people really invested into this game. Which is definitely a thing that's going to definitely work. Let's see, it'll be $40 game, so not that full price. They also have a $50 deluxe edition, a $60 twin pack that gets you double exposure if you just want to get both in there. I'm surprised they don't have one that has all the games in it. Just like, oh, here's a limited edition, just enjoy all of it.
Probably because last year they released a game that was everything in it.
There's that. That sort of looks like a kind of a desperate ploy.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I'm the sicko that has to play it because I've played them all. Except for the fact that I have not finished Double Exposure. I do have to finish that, but I have heard that the ending totally loses the plot. And yeah, for that reason, I'm not excited at all. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I enjoy Life is Strange for what it is. Yeah, Chloe is back, but her voice actor isn't back, so it's a cheap ploy. Yeah. Also, we don't even know who's even like there because they've laid off most of Deck Nine.
I think there were rumors around they essentially laid off the writers once they were done writing the story for the game. And it's like that's
Makes
always great because you never make adjustments to it or anything.
sense.
But yeah, there you go. So yeah, any like adjustments they would need to make that'd be made by non-writers. Which also really so yeah, that's the game that's certainly got a lot going on, so we'll have to see where that ends up, but I'm gonna guess most people are gonna be questionable about what this is doing. There you go. But if you needed a better game coming out that day, Nintendo might have done that. They announced Super Mario Bros. Wonder, Nintendo Switch 2 Edition, plus Meetup in Bella Bell Park. That'll be out that day. This is the original Switch game with the new expansion Meetup in Bella Bell Park that adds new co-op and competitive stuff to the game. It still doesn't seem like this has much solo stuff to it. From what it seems, it adds a new area, Bella Bell Park, as you would expect. It has two large plazas filled with attractions. Yeah, 7 different types of attractions, which you can play with up to 3 friends on the same system. Supports game share fun. To 12 friends can compete against one another in the game room plaza's 6 additional attractions. So yeah, let's see, they added Toad Brigade training camp to this. That's maybe more solo stuff, but a challenge mode kind of sense. There's a new assist mode. Turn this on while you play the courses, and you'll have the opportunity to recover quickly from unexpected falls into pits without losing a life, or avoid taking damage no matter which character you play as. So that's maybe the thing they should have had from the start, instead of just making two characters that mode. That could be bad for, you know, kids that don't care about those characters and want to play as old characters. Rosalina's been added to the cast here. Luma is also playable as an assist character. There's that, and yeah, I guess there's some new enemies as well. The Koopalings, I guess, are the new enemies here.
Yeah, of course they'd show up eventually.
So yeah, there's your thing here. I think it's a $20 add-on, so it'll be an $80 game total if you don't already have the base game. A lot for what they're mostly adding here is, you know, co-op and
yeah.
There's like a lot of there's like a lot of value here, actually, if you enjoy a lot of the co-op and multiplayer stuff. I particularly don't, although I do play with my brother, so I might, you know, give that a try there. I don't know when it's called like meetup at Bella Bell Park. Granted, yes, they've told us what that is, but I don't think the average Joe will just want to buy it just because of that. So, you know, there's that to think about it. I will say though, it's, you know, we'll probably get to it in the story, but I do want to buy that talking flower. That flower is the funniest thing I've played from a Mario game in a while. So
yeah, that is also part of this. They announced the talking flower is a thing that they're releasing. It is not like an AI toy thing that came all the rage over the last fall for the holiday season.
Yeah,
seems to just be a thing that says about that's at least neat. So yeah.
Okay.
There you go for that.
Please be good.
let's see here. Yeah, we had the last thing here. Bubsy 40 is launching on May 22nd. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. That's going to be a $20 game. Coming on pretty much everything. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. And yeah, that demo was pretty good, so might be the one Bubsy game to get excited about for the first time in its 30-year existence, I guess.
Yeah. Kayla previewed the last Steam demo. I played the demo that was at PAX West. Mm-hmm. All signs point to this game being good. And that, you know, lies solely on that development house, because they definitely care and they know what they're doing.
Yeah. That's why I said, please be good. Please be good. You know, we've been this poor cat has been dragged through the mud for three terrible games. Give him at least one.
There's more. They did a couple on the last gen. I think the best one was the one done by the what was it? It was like a rhythm platformer game.
Yeah.
So that was pretty decent. There you go. That's your last date here. Some pretty interesting stuff. Anything there you're checking out, Brandon?
Over the last few games we discussed.
Yeah.
Marathon is definitely one I'm keeping my eye on, because I really want that to be good, and I kind of want that franchise to make that IP to make a comeback. I don't know about Donkey Kong Country Returns HD, because that, like you said, that one that came out wasn't really good. Had some issues. But maybe that expansion for Super Mario Brothers Wonder. I'll have to get a good look at it first. And also Bubsy 40, because, again, I want that game to be good, like, very badly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it, far as I see it.
How about Dander?
Yeah. I mean, I love platformers, so honestly, they both are. So Super Mario Brothers Wonder Meet Up in Bell Park is something that has my attention. I'll probably just go ahead and fork over the $20 for the update and see how it goes from there. Bubsy 4D, as I've mentioned, I played the preview, so it also has my attention there. I've never played any Bubsy game, period. So this will be my first foray into it, and that'll be interesting. As I mentioned with Life is Strange, like I'm gonna jump into that just because I'm already this far in. I might as well finish it if it is the last one. I don't know. And yeah, like a lot of this stuff does seem interesting. Well, no, Greedfall, I don't care about. Marathon, the more we hear about it, the more interesting it seems, even though that's not my cup of tea, but I'm definitely gonna keep my eye on that one. But the next thing we're talking about is by far what I'm most interested in, so.
Yeah. We also had the Xbox Developer Direct that happened, with a handful of games here. Let's see, we started off with Forza Horizon 6, which is set in Japan, and yeah, let's see, this is coming out to Xbox, PC, and Game Pass on May 19th, later in the year for PS5. And yeah, as somebody who's played all of the games in the franchise in the series, this one really isn't doing much for me, mostly because I don't really have faith in this studio making a game that doesn't hold your hand for way too long. They are games that, require you to do a lot of work early on, that you may or may not want to do, just to make sure it shows you everything you could potentially do. And like replaying Forza Horizon 4 on my new PC here, that's definitely been the biggest bummer, is how long it takes to get going, and I'm still in the middle of the intro, like 2 or 3 hours in. Still have more to do, unfortunately. It's a franchise where, it really needs to pay attention to things like Breath of the Wild and Ghost of Yote and these other games that do a quick intro, but don't sit there and hold your hands and limit what you can do for very long. And these games frequently love to interrupt you to be like, "Oh, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this." And it just gets really annoying. I've played less and less of each game since then. But yeah, this looks nice visually. I would say maybe they've not done a great job on some of the art style stuff, because it looks like a fairly bland version of Japan, to a degree, especially after playing something like Ghost of Yote, where it's like that version of Japan looks incredible. This is just like, oh, here's some streets and such in Japan, and they got, the cherry blossoms as you would expect, and that looks nice and all, but yeah, it's got a lot of work to do for getting me back into this series. But I think it's a pretty easy skip, even if I wasn't just avoiding Xbox stuff because of all of their bullshit. But yeah, it seems like it'll probably do pretty well because it does everything that the last one does, plus probably some new stuff. I don't know that I got a ton of an idea of what's really new here. But yeah, that's what you were looking forward to this one, Danrib.
Yeah, I actually am. Main reason being, I am a Japan sicko. I went through Assassin's Creed Shadows. I haven't done Ghost of Yote yet, but I will. And yeah, obviously this takes place in a modern world, and as someone that hasn't been there yet, I definitely want to take in those sights. Yeah, I know you mentioned the cherry blossoms, but at the same time, it's like, the different cityscapes there are going to be awesome. I'm also a huge fan of Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Not that drifting is a huge thing in this game, or if it will be, but that seems cool. I don't know what they really plan on doing with the Gundam that we saw in the end, but that's obviously a big thing in that area of Japan as well. So I am definitely looking forward to just taking in what they've really picked up about both Japanese and Japanese car culture as we move forward there. And then I don't know if it's been done in any of the previous Forza games, but even though I'm not much of a sim guy, the city builder that you can do with that free field also looks pretty interesting. Not that I'd want to spend so much time there, though.
Yeah, looks like they're doing some neat stuff, but probably not enough for me to spend $70 for this. And it seems like they are going all in on making Game Pass people pay more, because apparently if you have Game Pass Ultimate, the premium upgrade bundle that gets you the premium the premium content without owning the game is $60. Mm-hmm. Which is that's a lot of money to spend on a game you're not owning.
Yeah. Wow.
Even if they were doing like $80 for the premium edition for Game Pass Ultimate people, but yeah, they're not. Mm-hmm. They give us $60 and you can play it early. I think it's on 15th, May 15th, yeah. For your early launch version. Mm-hmm. So that's where they're, you know, their bread is buttered by the Forza Horizon games, and they're getting as much.
Mm-hmm.
And then they followed up with Beast of Reincarnation, the new Game Freak game.
Yep.
They call the One Person, One Dog action RPG.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly looks a step up from their typical Pokemon game.
Yeah, because they don't have a super tight, crunching deadline that they have to meet.
Yeah, and they're making a game that looks pretty interesting. It's sort of a, I don't know if this would be like a post-apocalyptic world of sorts.
Yep.
But yeah, there's this like blight that has affected a lot of things, as well as your main character. But you're fighting a lot of creatures and robots and such, so it certainly got the, mm-hmm. the soul style, like here's a gross looking giant wolf thing you're fighting.
Yeah,
so I don't know how much of it is a souls like got stylistically a lot of that, but it might be more doing its own thing.
Yeah, it's also got like a lot of Nier Automata sort of things going for it as well, especially with the art direction.
So yeah, that looks pretty neat. That doesn't have a date yet. I think it's for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It'll also be on Game Pass for that, but also be on PS5. So mm-hmm. you can check it out on any of those.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a little bit of a surprise here with Kiln, new Double Fine Productions game mm-hmm. that they announced. It's a multiplayer pottery party brawler. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you kind of have this neat little creation mechanic where you kind of build out the, I don't know, like your pottery, like the way that pottery is made, but not the sexual way that was a ghost that has the big
scene
for that.
Mm-hmm.
You're building out these different styles of pottery that have, that tend to get filtered into certain archetypes of characters that then decide how you're playing this mode, or the different modes that it has. And it's almost got a little bit of Splatoon, or I was trying to think of what else this kind of reminds me of. But yeah, you're kind of have more damage dealers, more speed characters, because you're trying to carry, at least in the one mode they showed, like water from one part of the map to the kiln that that they have, and trying to put out the fire. So if you get enough water into it, you'll douse it and win the match, kind of thing, which is neat. But yeah, that's that'll be out this spring. So in the next few months, they're doing a closed beta test, so you can check that out. Also be on Game Pass, as well as PS5, Xbox, and PC, so they're returning to making games on non-Xbox platforms after, I think it was Keeper that was only on Xbox and PC.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I imagine this probably won't be a very expensive game, but I did mention this came out of their Amnesia Fortnite, which is their little like game jam thing they do every once in a while, and I do remember that they had a game called Kiln in one of their older ones they did. Because they would do like a Humble Bundle or something where you could check out a bunch of the prototypes for games that they put out. Some of them would get built into more full games, but it may not. There is one that was called Kiln, so I wouldn't be surprised if that is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That looked neat. And then, for the last one, They featured Fable. We got to see like what exactly this game is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a modern reinterpretation of what the old Fable games were.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you are interested in that or not, I don't know, but I was certainly like, well, there's no, you know, older British man making grandiose claims about this game, so there's a little bit of flavor that's not here in this mm-hmm. presentation. But yeah, it's an open world action RPG, like the original. It seems like the combat is much more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
In modern, you know, there seem to be like stamina, or not stamina, a shield bar on the enemies that you could break and stun them for a bit to get more attacks in. The combat stuff they showed didn't really look mm-hmm. all that interesting to me. Seemed pretty much not the thing that you want out of this game. Because a lot of the other stuff is where it kind of seems more interesting. You make your hero, and they're the first hero in generations, I guess. You kind of build up your story from there. It's all this kind of fun stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Dialogue choices, your reputation's kind of a big thing. So much so they kind of highlight the aspects of your character that people don't like. So like as you buy up businesses and such and kind of get more rich, it has that fun. There's a fun little bit of a woman that you walked up to is like treated you like a rich asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. And it kind of shows the traits that the character is reacting to. And it's like, that's neat. And yeah, you have the same kind of thing of you building a life, but you kind of try to do it, like build a family in different cities and such, and try to, you know, sneak around and cheat on your spouse, your initial spouse and family and all that. And yeah, it looks all right. I don't know. I don't mm-hmm. know if this is going to turn out super well, but at least looks all right for what I expected out of this.
Yeah, I'm still not entirely sure. I mean, I liked the first couple of Fable games. I also liked Fable 3 all right, even though, honestly, that game wrote a check that it couldn't cash, to be frankly. But, I mean, this game's been in development for how long now? Like, when a game like that has, like, in development hell like that, and it's changed hands a couple of times, it's usually not a good sign. But, you know, it's possible, you know, the game will end up being good, and if it is, fantastic. But it's gonna have to prove it to me first.
Yeah. I think part of the time that it's taken is most because they started from scratch, even with team. It's a different team within Playground to make this game.
Yeah.
That's just something that takes time to build up from there, and then figure out how to work with your engine to make a completely different kind of game for that. But yeah, even from then, it's been lots of silence for so long. It's them probably doing the smart thing and not constantly talking about it for the entire like 6, 7, 8 years they've been working on this game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the interesting thing there. So we'll have to see. This is out. What did they say? This fall. So
mm-hmm.
that'll be out on PS5, Xbox, and PC at launch. So they finally got one of these ready in time. But we'll have to see where that goes. Probably see more of it over the summer, I assume. So that's your Xbox Developer Direct, and seemed fine for the most part. Mm-hmm. Beast of Reincarnation seems like that I want to check out, but still kind of a bit more left to see before I really decide I want it. But how about you, Brandon? Anything here that really interest you?
The big one is Beast of Reincarnation. That one, that direct kind of amazed me, and honestly, it's definitely on my radar now. The other ones, maybe. I'm gonna need to see more.
How about you, Danrib?
This actually might have been the best Xbox showcase I've ever seen because everything is something I'm interested in. Talked about Forza very briefly. Kiln looks really, really cool. A bunch of my friends got into pottery, and I love the wild and zany games like this. Obviously Tim Schafer's team does some cool stuff, and I definitely do want to try this one out. Beast and Reincarnation was the one that I was most excited for, and I did not expect that. Like, it's funny how we're going to talk about this, and all of a sudden, the story is you made this and you made Pokemon look like that. So, yeah, like, obviously, we're not going to have Pokemon look like Beast and Reincarnation anytime soon. But, for all the people clamoring for Monolith Soft to get involved with Pokemon in some way, it's very clear that Game Freak has some talent there. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's definitely something I'm interested in. I actually just put a bid in Fantasy Critic for that one. And then, I've never played a Fable game, but everything about this one looks pretty cool as well. I know Brandon talked a little bit about it being in development hell and changing hands quite a bit. And I made a pretty snide joke on Twitter saying like, "Oh, hi, we're Playground Games and we're doing Forza and Fable," because everyone else got laid off. Because I'm not saying that's specifically what happened, but when all of you, when you go through as much change and turmoil as Microsoft has gone through over the past couple years, that's just what you're going to see, because Lionhead Studios doesn't exist anymore. So, yeah.
So there's that event. And now we're gonna get to the rest of the news here, the industry news. Ubisoft was kind of the big story of the week as they revealed their new restructuring here. It's still going to involve a lot of layoffs and such.
Layoffs and cuts and cancellations, and
Yeah.
it's going to be ugly.
They have a final round of cost cutting and studio closures. They're going to drive another 200 million euros of savings, which I think the current stuff they've been doing over the last year or so has been resulting in 300 million euros of savings. So, still going to be quite a bit of work to go. And they announced the new structure of the company, where they're going to be focusing on open world adventures and games as a service native experiences. And they mentioned that there's five of these studios essentially, or whatever groups that are holding these different brands. There's Vantage Studios, which is the one that Tencent is invested in, that holds Assassin's Creed or Far Cry and Rainbow Six as part of that. All the rest of these have very Japanese style names of Creative House 2, which is focusing on competitive and cooperative shooter experiences like Ghost Recon, Splinter Cell, and The Division. Creative House 3 operating a roster of select sharp live experiences. Valhalla, For Honor, Riders Republic, Skull and Bones, and The Crew. Creative House 4 dedicated to immersive fantasy worlds and narrative-driven universes, which features Anno, Beyond Good and Evil, Might and Magic, Prince of Persia, and Rayman. And then Creative House 5, that is quote-unquote reclaiming a strong position in casual and family-friendly games, which features the brands of their Hasbro portfolio, Hungry Shark, Invincible, Guarding the Globe, Just Dance, Hitch App portfolio, Libri portfolio, and Uno. And so yeah, they you can read the article for a lot more here, but they're very much trying to restructure their company because it's a company that has been full of people. I think been up to like 20,000 people total working on games, and that's worked fine when they were able to get games out pretty consistently. But now at a point where they're missing a bunch of games and have had, Beyond Good and Evil being worked on for nearly 20 years now, Beyond Good and Evil 2, being worked on for nearly 20 years, and Prince of Persia, Sands of Time remake being worked on for at least 6 years that we know of. It was probably a few years before that as well. Mm-hmm. Making for a studio that now, or a company that now has the Ducks supposedly in more of a neat row. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that ends up working out, but they've supposedly canceled, I think at least 5 games.
Yep.
Here. There's 3 new IPs, one of which was a mobile title. There's Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time remake, which is the big cancellation.
Yeah.
For a game that was announced, I think, in the end of 2020 to be released in, I think, either January or February, a few months later, and then ended up getting delayed out of that indefinitely, to the point that I think I've seen it mentioned that Cyberpunk's launch spooked them from releasing that game in the state that it was, which is like, boy, what was that state look if Cyberpunk really bad unfinished launch spooked them? What the hell were they going to release a few months later? That's unfortunately no longer going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's maybe 5 or 6 other games. Supposedly one of those might be the Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag remake. We'll know. Mm-hmm. But that might be the other one that people are aware of to some degree. This certainly makes for an interesting part of the Ubisoft experience that they've really been not much of a factor in this generation so far.
Mm-hmm.
They had Watch Dogs Legion at the launch, an Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and it took them 4 more years to get another Assassin's Creed out, a big one at least. They tried to make one that was a bit more of a retro-styled game, but it's Far Cry hasn't been seen after 6. That was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that TV show, so maybe they'll have another one coming whenever that one's ready. We don't know, but they've never had many big games. Like Star Wars Outlaws did not do well for what they put into that game. Assassin's Creed Shadows did do pretty well, but not enough to make up for everything else. Avatar did not do all that well. Doing more for it, and I assume getting bumps every time the new Avatar movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Which those are at least coming out often enough that probably helps out to some degree. Because I think they just put out like a big like third person mode update for that most recent Avatar game, so they're still supporting it. But then there's a lot of games that are just going nowhere. The Division, they've been working on that mobile game for a long time. The free-to-play game, I believe, got canceled at a certain point. And then Julian Garrity was talking about The Division 3 and then immediately left to go join DICE. Then you're like, what the fuck was that about?
Mm-hmm.
They're in a very weird place, and it's unfortunate because they've made lots of great games in the past, but it seems like they've struggled to adapt to the way that the pandemic and all that has changed the business of making games. And they seem like they're talking a lot about AI and all that. They're not great for getting new games out. So we'll, that's been a whole thing.
Yeah, it's been really tough for Ubisoft. You know, we're talking about a company that was on the cutting edge like 2 generations ago, even last generation. And now it's just been really hard for them to scratch the surface. You know, I just talked about Assassin's Creed Shadows. I enjoyed that game, but that one game is not going to save the company. You know, you were talking about a lot of their other failures. And the funny thing is, a lot of their failures are games that people still really like. Like X-Defiant, like I had a lot of friends that really enjoyed that game. So it's tough that things are being canceled out the way that they are. Obviously, I personally was looking forward to Prince of Persia's Sands of Time remake. And then, you know, hearing those stories about Black Flag being remade, and not only remade, but releasing imminently, and that being part of a delay is crazy. And I don't understand why Beyond Good and Evil persists when we've never even seen that. And let's be honest, that game is not going to make any money if and when it does come out, unless
Yeah.
it's a live service thing. And we don't want that to be live service.
Yeah.
The problem that Ubisoft faces right now is that they have a lot of valuable IP, but the problem is that the IP is for prestige. It's not for sales, and Ubisoft wants to make sales. And unfortunately, we live in we're unfortunately in an industry where a $1 million profit is not enough of a profit. They want to see double, triple digits, and that's rough. Like, I would love to see a Ubisoft that can invest in its double A lineup, but they don't care. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much. I mean, at this point, they've sunk so much money into that Beyond Good and Evil sequel that I don't think they would, even if they did release it now, I don't think they would ever make their money back.
Yeah, and like we're talking about a game that didn't even sell well the first time out. So why would the second one do any better when it was three generations back? Like, if we're talking about Splinter Cell, even it's like what the last one came out on the Xbox 360. We don't even know if those people playing games are still playing games. So.
I think the rumor about why Beyond Good and Evil still goes on is because they supposedly took French money, French government money, in the process of making that game, and that prevents them from just canceling it without penalties, I assume. I don't know how true that is, but that's certainly a weird reason to have to keep working on a thing for so long. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting restructuring, seeing what else, what more blood they have to spill to kind of get this the savings they're talking about here, how that's going to work.
Yeah.
It's just canceling games doesn't really do much. It's done people there. But I assume they're going to be shutting down some more studios and laying off a bunch of people. So
Oh yeah.
we'll see where that goes. Let's see. We got more layoffs. Starbreeze announced another round of layoffs. They just laid off people in October, and now they're doing more as things are still not going well. The
Yeah.
them flubbing that oh, what was the game? Payday, Payday 3. Flubbing that has really screwed the entire company.
Yeah.
They're probably scrambling to figure out something new that can get them back into decent shape, but yeah, it's really not banking your entire business on that is not always going to go well. And it seems like, yeah, the last October layoffs was due to a D&D game they were working on that got canceled. So maybe it's some more stuff like that where projects they're working on that could potentially keep them going not going well. And yeah, it seems like just posting on LinkedIn that they're being laid off. I don't think they've said how many, but probably a decent enough amount of people. So yeah, for there. And another studio, the Moonshot Games, I think it is, makers of Wildgate, that came out last year, a game that I've seen a lot of good positive things about, but it did not sell well. So the studio's kind of in a weird place, and yeah,
Yeah.
they had to lay off some people. I don't think there's any sort of specific amount here as well, so just some amount of people. But yeah, we'll have to see where that ends up going. But yeah, this was the one of the two studios formed under Dreamhaven, which is set up
Yeah.
by former Blizzard president Mike Morhaime. Yeah, the other one was Secret Door that made Thunderfolk. Similarly, like a quality game that just, so yeah,
Yeah.
more set consequences. So there's that. But yeah, there you go for those layoffs.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. So we got that, and now we got some serious shit involving EA.
We have a number of members of Congress, I think mostly Democrats, who have signed a letter calling on the FTC to scrutinize the deal that would take EA private with a group mostly of Saudi's sovereign wealth fund PIF, as well as some other investors, but mostly it's like 93% Saudis for this. So as part of the labor caucus making this request, so there's that. Yeah, they sent this letter on January 22nd and are suggesting that this acquisition, which will result in the PIF holding a 93% stake in the big publisher EA, will incentivize layoffs, offshoring, and studio closures, and other cost-cutting measures, as they're essentially lumping a huge bit of debt on the company that they'll have to solve some magical problem there to make it go away easily. But yeah, certainly a big company like this being owned by a foreign entity is not a great thing for American economy as far as these companies are concerned. We'll have to see if this ends up going anywhere because under this administration, I don't expect much. But yeah, yeah, we'll have to see where that goes.
Yeah, because I do think we really do need to take a really close look at how the Saudis are basically gobbling up huge parts of the, well, slowly gobbling up huge parts of the industry the way they are.
So I'd say gobbling up EA would be a huge part.
Oh, yeah.
And not slowly. We'll see where that goes. There's that. Then we got some Steam news. Valve has made some slight changes to their AI disclosure stuff on Steam that will require more specific disclosures. Yeah, they've developers now only required to say whether they're using the technology if they're using it to generate content. That can be assets that appear in game or within marketing. Companies are asked to describe what has been created in the text description. They also ask that developers disclose if their game generates AI content itself. So yeah, this is kind of carving out a little bit of the part of AI use, which is that of the tools you're using have AI in them. You don't need to disclose that. Which makes sense when AI is being forced into everything, whether you want it to or not. And I don't think developers were really disclosing that aspect of it, of like, oh, we're using, you know, Unity or Epic or the Unreal Engine, and then that inherently has the AI building stuff in it. You know, they're not really doing that. So I think being specific on that, because there is that element of when you inevitably see AI talk and somebody comes in to a discussion, is like, well, this is just the future. You're going to have to get used to it. You know, everybody's going to be using it. And, like, nobody is, when they're talking about AI use, talking about, you know, developers using Google and seeing that AI summary thing. Like, nobody's concerned about that. That's not a thing you know, or any of the way that coding tools have AI in it to, as like an auto, it's like nobody's really that concerned about that stuff. It's more the AI generation, image generation, video generation kind of stuff that people don't want to see in any sense of any of the stuff that they want to play. So much so there was a life sim game that came out. I think it was Heartopia that did not mention any of the AI stuff in it until people noticed it and complained about it, and then they had to post a disclosure there. So yeah, devs are still trying to sneak that stuff past people, and people are getting pretty good at noticing it. But yeah, Valve is kind of evolving this disclosure form to make it more useful in this day and age as it gets into every tool set that developers are using. At least some good news there. And then, here on the, Nintendo had a direct earlier today that was based on the Super Mario Galaxy movie, the new trailer they were going to show, and they have put that out.
Yeah.
Which mainly features Yoshi.
Yeah.
So you can check that out and say that, yep, they got Yoshi. He's introduced as being in that sand stage of Super Mario Odyssey. Is like, oh, they're like, oh, there's some beast in this cave here we need you to deal with. And they clear out the blockage in this pipe that the creature is hiding in. Mm-hmm. And out pops out what seems vicious at first, but it ends up being Yoshi.
Yep.
And then you see more Yoshi for a while throughout this and all the references that come with that. Like, hey, what if Yoshi has a super scope?
Mm-hmm.
This one of the dinosaur. I guess a reference to Yoshi Safari. Mm-hmm. As one of the super scope games and all that, as well as, you know, various other things that are going on here. Mm. It's a sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie, which was itself full of references. And guess what? This one is also full of references.
Full of references and not really much of a plot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the first film was exactly the same.
Yeah. And I guess they also changed the release date.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the original one was. I think it was later in April. But with this trailer, they are going to have it out on April 1st. So, April Fools. Gotta go watch a Mario movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first one. Obviously, these are catered towards kids. But yeah, you gotta love all the actual love they're putting into it. Especially hearing about having a 70-piece orchestra doing the soundtrack. That really interests me. And yeah, it's cool to see. But yeah, it's gotten to a point where there's a lot going on. You know, they still have to actually go to the galaxy. Obviously, they just introduced Yoshi, who was part of Galaxy 2 and not Galaxy 1, I believe. So it'll be interesting seeing how they have some sort of continuity. But for a kids' movie, who cares, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the way the fire flower is introduced here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this thing that looks like it's going to be just like a flashlight kind of thing. But then they ingest the fire flower's power and all their like cape and all that burns away to the classic white outfits. I was like, oh, we're just using this to see. And, so I would maybe say this movie doesn't look as good as Yoshi's artistically. That'll probably be a pretty solid movie. So, there you go. And that's going to end up doing it for the show, unless you guys have anything to add.
Nope, not really.
Yep, that's it for me.
All right, so yeah, that's going to do it for the show. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. We'll be in a new month.
Mm-hmm.
The shortest month and maybe the best month. As it gets the fuck out of the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers who are dealing with getting snowed in.
Seriously.
Like I was looking at some of the cars I can see, and the snow is up to the middle of the tires, like basically almost to the to the door. I'm like, oh, great. I'm going to have to go dig my car out. I might do that here before I go to bed so I can have a little bit easier time for tomorrow. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.